tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabe. Anabe is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome, fellow patriots. Welcome, fellow deplorables. Welcome, all of you, Drugs of Society, you rock dwellers, you sycophants, you sinkos, you mega Nazis, you awful, awful people. But you know, we think of you as friends, allies, and patriots, and you're always welcome here. And this place is the Conservative Commandos radio show. And I'm Rick Trader, coming to you from the My Pillow Studios and My Store Studios of the AUN TV network. And joining me today as my co-host is the patriot from the battleground state, the battle-born state, the silver state of Nevada, and that is Sharon Engel. And Sharon, welcome back. Welcome back to Conservative Commandos.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's great to be here. And I guess I wanted to start out the show with my favorite topic, which is always election integrity. And what they're doing with the president's executive order, you know, he had an executive order put out with 7 points. And they're really nothing. I mean, the points are already there in the law. That's the thing that really gets you. And now the judges have decided to rule against his executive order. There's no there. So I guess I wanted to go through, first of all, the seven points.
The 7 points. And then I wanted to know what judges again. Is it these low-level district court judges once again? See, I really think that the Supreme Court needs to be ready to step in on these rulings automatically. You know, like tomorrow at the Supreme Court, they're going to discuss Trump's tariffs at the Supreme Court, all right? Now, I don't know how long this has been in the courts, but the Supreme Court needs to step in on this all the time. And you're going to tell us the 7 points, and you already told us that these 7 points are already in the law. So where are these judges coming from?
Well, and when you look at it, you'll see, you know, okay, maybe this much, they've got room to do this, but really, the first point is voter roll maintenance. Clean up the voter rolls. This is
no-brainer.
Executive Order 14248, right? And it's in his executive order, but already in HAVA, Help America Vote Act, and NVRA, which is the National Voter Registration Act, already. They say that they must make a reasonable effort to remove ineligible voters. So the executive order just directs the attorney general to act against states that aren't cleaning up their rolls. So that's all he does. He says, enforce that law. That's already there, just enforce it, right? Mm-hmm. The second point of the executive order is that they must prove that they are a citizen. Already in NVRA, it says they must self-attest under penalty of perjury to be citizens. So they already have to check the box saying, I'm a citizen. The only difference is right now they don't have to show documentation, but with the executive order, they do. They have to show documentary proof that they're a U.S. citizen. If they are coming from a foreign country, they have to show that. Now, your smart ID or whatever they, what is that? The one that you have to get on the airplane. It's not smart, but I think everybody, I can't think of their
and I can't help you
real, real ID.
Real ID, there you go.
Your real ID. The reason I call it smart is because encoded within that real ID is your proof of citizenship. So if you have a real ID, it shows whether or not you are. But honestly, to get a real ID, you have to be a citizen. So, you know, there's that. The third thing is the active voter waiting periods. The executive order doesn't shorten or bypass the two federal election laws that waiting periods before the voter can be purged. So it just says enforce this. There is a long waiting period. You have to miss at least one election before they can send you a postcard saying, we noticed you didn't vote. Are you still here? If they fail to answer that, then you wait for the next election. And if they don't vote again, then you send them another card that says, we noticed you didn't vote in two elections. Please respond or we're taking you off the active roll and putting you on the inactive roll. Then they have to be on the inactive roll before they can and have missed those two more elections, basically. So it's six elections altogether. You haven't voted for 6 years. So three elections, 6 years. You haven't voted for 6 years. They can finally say, we're removing you. And at any time, you can come back and say, wait a second, don't remove me. I just haven't voted, but I'm going to vote now. So
Sharon,
they just
Sharon,
put them on an inactive list. And all the executive order says is enforce that law. Don't wait.
Sharon, you know me. I always vote right at my courthouse using an absentee ballot. Well, when I went down there last week to vote, guess what? I was on the inactive voter list. You know what? I voted in the last election. I voted in the last election, which was the presidential election. I didn't vote in the primary election because I don't associate myself with the Republican Party per se. You know, I usually vote Republican, but I'm not registered as a Republican. Okay. But I end up on the inactive list. Ended up on the inactive list. And last year was the presidential election. And you know Rick Trader did not miss the presidential election. This year I was classified as inactive.
So there is a disconnect here on who gets on the inactive list, but generally speaking, it's kind of difficult to get on the inactive list. So
not for me.
Not for you. Not for Rick Trader.
No.
Okay, so we're discussing this executive order 14248, which is Trump's executive order on election integrity. The fourth provision is that voter databases for voter eligibility verification requires the federal agencies to give states across give states access to immigration lists, death lists, identification records, those kinds of things. HAVA, El Help America Vote Act, just suggested that they could do that if they wanted to, so that they could go to other lists and see if someone had died, or, you know, just do those registration matches with other lists, which is helpful to decide where a person is, if they died, where did they get naturalized, those kinds of things. And so it's just a suggestion in the national law, and Trump said, no, we're going to make it so they required these federal agencies to share their information. The fifth provision is election date deadlines. So he mandates that all ballots must be received by election day. And in fact, we have an election day here in Nevada. And he based this all ballots must be received by election day based on our laws federally as well, and based on some codes that tell you when election day is. And it's been there for hundreds of years now. The sixth provision is to block Biden's executive order, which implemented voter registration across federal agencies. So anytime you go into a federal agency, you get re-registered. And it's automatic. We have automatic registration here at our DMV. Every time you make a call to the DMV, you get re-registered. And then the registrar or the county clerk has to mail out and say, did you want to be registered? Well, some people have religious, like Jehovah's Witnesses don't want to be registered to vote. They don't vote. It's against their religion. So they get irritated because now they're registered again and they have to go in and unregister. And every time they make a trip to the Department of Motor Vehicles, this happens to them automatically. They can't, they don't have any opt-in or opt-out say so at the DMV. It just automatically happens. And Biden wanted to do that across all federal agencies. So anytime you went to visit the IRS or, you know, the welfare office or anything that has to do with federal, there you are, automatically re-registered.
The problem with Joe Biden's theory is anybody goes to the DMV gets registered, even non-citizens.
Felons, you know, people that have had their citizenship, their
civil rights
revoked. Like I said, there's religious reasons. There's just plain personal reasons why you don't want to be on that voter registration roll. So anyway, he revoked that. So he's blocked that, said that's not going to happen. And then the seventh one is that the voting system standards and security requires a paper ballot and disallows encoded only barcodes. Help America Vote Act mandates that the voting system standards include voter verifiable audit trails. Well, what he's doing is providing the audit trail, which is that has to be on paper so that if you have to go back and do a recount, you don't have to use whatever the machine told you. You actually can see the ballot. And the way they have it set up now in Nevada, and many states are going to this, is that you go to a machine and you do it like you did. You check all of the boxes that you want to vote for, and then it prints out a ballot. You look at that printed ballot to make sure that all the boxes that you checked are the ones that you want. So it's basically a printer is what it is. You take that printed ballot to a tabulator and you slip it into the tabulator and you watch it count your votes on that machine. If for some reason you need to have a hand count or verify the votes that went to a certain election, every one of those ballots is there, and you can actually see the paper ballot, and people can actually count it. So they are getting to that place where they can provide a very secure and give confidence to you that, you know, I got my ballot, I cast my ballot, and none of these are hooked up to the internet, these machines. And so hopefully this time through, we will have less question about what's going to happen in our roles, but I mean, in our elections. But now back to what the court did. So a federal judge blocked his efforts to protect election integrity by requiring proof of United States citizenship on voter registration forms, finding that Trump lacks the authority to direct such changes. Remember, he didn't make a change in the federal law with regard to this. The federal law says you have to be a citizen to vote. The HAVA, or Help America Vote Act, and the National Voter Registration Act say that you have to attest to it. You have to say under penalty of perjury that you are a citizen before you will be allowed to vote. All Trump said is that instead of just taking your word for it, we want to see documentary proof. We want to make sure that you really are a citizen. Provide your documentary proof, which is a birth certificate, passport. You know, there are all kinds of documentary proofs that you
Things
can.
Things that everyone should have anyway.
And you put those on file and you're good to go. But what he's saying is, basically he's saying, I think you might lie to me. And in fact, we probably have good evidence. In fact, we have some proof. Even in Nevada, we had a case about 12 years ago now, where an illegal alien had voted in every election, and what they finally caught her doing was voting twice.
Can a citizen make a citizen's arrest if they notice somebody has voted illegally?
They can. But, you know, the citizen's
There's
arrest
always a
is,
but.
yeah, well, a citizen's arrest is always verified by police.
All right, let's get that break in. And you are listening to the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader. We're talking about voting, voting rights, and what rights you shouldn't have, especially if you're a non-citizen. And today's show, like each and every one of our shows, being brought to you by the First Amendment, protected by the Second. See, Sharon's looking up citizens' arrest as we speak, as we go to break. And we'll be right back.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest 3-in-1 sale ever with a limited edition product, a back in stock special, and a closeout deal you won't find anywhere else. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get our MyPillow bed sheets, only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings, regular $119.98, only $29.88. Once they're gone for good. How about our My Towels? They're finally back in stock, but not for long. Get a six-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And for the first time and the only time ever, get our limited edition premium My Pillows. They're made with Giza cotton and designer gusset. Queens $17.98, Kings only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get the best offers ever. Quantities are extremely limited, so order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel. And I'm Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the MyStore Studios of the AUNTV network. And in the first segment, Sharon and I were talking about voter integrity, how Donald Trump has been sued again by one of these district judges. We'll start trying to stop his executive orders. And Sharon, we left off with citizen's arrest. Can I, as a citizen, arrest someone who has voted illegally? Tell us about citizen's arrest.
Well, it varies from state to state. So I just looked up my state, and but I think that there are probably similar requirements. It says that in Nevada, a citizen's arrest is legal under specific conditions. So that's the thing that makes me think that each state is going to have a specific condition. For a public offense committed or attempted in a person's presence, this means that if you witness someone committing a crime, you can detain them until law enforcement arrives. When a felony has been committed, even if not in the person's presence, if you have a reasonable cause to believe that a felony has occurred and that person you are detaining is the perpetrator, you can also make that arrest, but you have to wait until law enforcement arrives. And for misdemeanors or gross misdemeanors, you can only arrest someone for these offenses if you witness the crime being committed. So a felony, you know, I think we're using this specifically for voting purposes. If you commit some kind of voting crime, that would be a felony. So under that, you could make that arrest, and then but you'd have to wait till law enforcement arrives. You can only use force necessary to detain the subject. So you can't use force if you're not wanting to detain them. Deadly force is not permitted unless you are acting in self-defense. So you can't, you know, pull a gun on them, I guess. I don't know. But I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not sure what constitutes deadly force. If a citizen's arrest is deemed unlawful, the person making the arrest could face criminal charges or civil liability. This includes potential restitution payments to the person who was unlawfully detained. Therefore, it is crucial to ensure that the arrest is justified under the law. So what they're saying is you better make sure that they actually did the crime, or you then will be punished for detaining them illegally.
Well, Sharon, I also looked up citizens' arrest in New Jersey. It was very similar to what you read. But then I looked up citizens' arrest in New Jersey of voting crimes. Mm-hmm. And what I got was, in New Jersey, a private citizen may make a citizen's arrest for certain voting crimes under specific and limited conditions. But doing so is complex and carries significant legal risk. The safest course of action is to observe the situation, report it immediately to a law enforcement or a state election hotline, and let trained officials handle it. That kind of makes sense. But you know what, Sharon? If you see somebody voting who you know is not legally voting, or maybe even you suspect that this person is not a legal voter, then you should report it. Then you should call your police.
Mm-hmm. I think we're so surprised by it when we see it. I'm reminded of a fellow in Elko that came up to me after I was there speaking on election integrity, and he says, well, this happened to me. My name is Fred Smith, and I went into my voter registrar to vote on election day. Mm-hmm. And I stepped up to the window, and the guy next to me said to the clerk, my name is Fred Smith, and I want my ballot. Mm-hmm. And he said, wait a second, I'm Fred Smith. And the guy next to him said, oh, so sorry, my mistake, and turned around and left. Ooh. He was so shocked by it, and so were the people behind the desk, that they just stood there and looked at one another while the fellow went and got in his car and drove away. So what they could have done was gone out and got
a tag or something like
yes,
that. Yes,
yeah, you know, the license plate number and all of those things. Mm-hmm. But I think that's just a case of where when we see it, sometimes we're so shocked by it that we don't realize what we should do. And after it's happened, the shoulda, woulda, coulda's come in, and we don't have that same opportunity anymore because that person was using your name. So how do you know, right? How do you know? This is why we need voter ID, because that is the proof. That is the thing that says, yes, I am this person. Yes, I should be voting this ballot so that Fred Smith doesn't get his ballot stolen. That's one of the purposes for that. Deputizing that person behind that are watching the polls might also be a deterrent, just because they know if they try to do this, there's somebody there that's not going to make a citizen's arrest. This is, this has a little more official flavor to it. This is someone who's really able to determine whether a crime has been committed or not. So that would make a stronger deterrent, as you say, to doing something like this. But with mail-in ballots, you don't get that same opportunity to test, not just for citizenship, but just for who are you, because mail-in ballots have that opportunity for anyone to vote those ballots. One person I know got 7 ballots in the mail. Now he turned those in. That's how we know he got 7, but he could just as well have voted them all. So, you know, there is a problem with mail-in ballots in that the opportunity is there for mischief. And that's why, as we tighten this up, and I believe that the president is right not to trust you to tell the truth by checking the box as a citizen, that we do need documentation. However, this judge, Colleen Cotelli, obviously doesn't agree. She thinks that it's good enough to go on their say-so. Rick, I wanted you to hear what our president had to say about this judge and her decision, and what he said when she said, you can't do this. He said, free, fair, and honest elections unmarred by fraud, errors, or suspicion are fundamental to maintaining our constitutional republic. The right of American citizens to have their votes properly counted and tabulated without illegal dilution is vital to determining the rightful winner of an election. Under the Constitution, state governments must safeguard American elections in compliance with federal laws that protect Americans' voting rights and guard against dilution by illegal voting, discrimination, fraud, and other forms of malfeasance and error. Yet the United States has not adequately enforced federal election requirements that, for example, prohibit states from counting ballots received after Election Day or prohibit non-citizens from registering to vote. So, right, and I couldn't have said it better. And that's why the executive order was made. And this judge now is saying, yeah, their say-so is enough. And she's striking down his ability to mandate this, which I think every citizen should know that we have an activist judge. One more time, Judge Colleen Cotelli, a federal judge, blocking the rights of citizens to have a fair, free, honest vote.
And I would not be a bit surprised if that was an Obama judge or an Biden judge or a Clinton judge. And with that, Sharon, I knew we were going to go long on this segment, but you are listening to and watching The Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader. Go nowhere. We'll be back right after this break.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest 3-in-1 sale ever with a limited edition product, a back in stock special, and a closeout deal you won't find anywhere else. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get our MyPillow bed sheets, only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings, regular $119.98, only $29.88. Once they're gone for good. How about our My Towels? They're finally back in stock, but not for long. Get a 6-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And for the first time and the only time ever, get our limited edition premium My Pillows. They're made with Giza cotton and designer gusset. Queen $17.98, King's only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get the best offers ever. Quantities are extremely limited, so order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
And as always, thank you for staying with us. This is the Conservative Commanders Radio Show with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the MyStore Studios of the AUNTV Network. So, Sharon, we left the last segment. We were talking about this federal judge, a D.C. federal judge, who is trying to stop President Trump's executive order on election integrity. What else do we know about this woman?
Well, we know that she was appointed by William Rehnquist, but it was under the Bill Clinton administration. So she's been there a long time. Mm-hmm. And that I guess brings up this whole idea that once you're appointed to the bench, you stay for your lifetime. These are lifetime appointments. They don't just go away. So she's been there, like I said, a long time. She's a senior judge now, but one of the most interesting pieces of all of her resume is that she was the judge who found Dominic Box, and I don't know exactly what she found him guilty of. Let's see. He participated in the January 6th Capitol attacks, guilty on 6 charges. So we know that most of those Jan 6 charges were trumped up, and not to be punning, but the 6 charges are, you know, this was a political, I guess is what I'm saying. She was the judge who found him guilty on 6 charges. And before he was sentenced, Donald Trump pardoned him. And this judge then criticized Donald Trump's blanket pardon. So to me, she's looking for something that she could retaliate with against Donald Trump. And this was it. So to me, this is a political warfare here. She is proving her dominance over the presidency, right? The judges will have the last word. The president may think that he's in charge, but we really are. That's what this judge is saying to me, is that she had a personal reason to deny his executive order, and this was it. She had made this, as I say, a political sentencing of this fellow for whatever she felt his participation was in January 6th. Mm-hmm. And then when Trump pardoned this fellow, she made it her personal vendetta to get back at him. And this is one of those ways. And she's just asserting herself here into this by saying, I will have the last say-so, Mr. President.
I just looked up Dominic Box, and yes, it just says he waived the right to a jury trial and declined a plea deal offered by the prosecutors, opting instead for a bench trial overseen by Coler Coley or whatever her name is, in which Box admitted his involvement while retaining his appeal rights. The ruling was a case delayed in part by the U.S. Supreme Court decision issued shortly after his trial, in which justices ruled that obstruction of an official proceeding, the most serious of charges Box faced, does not apply to January 6th defendants. Box argued that dismissal of the obstruction charges were necessities dismissal of all remaining charges, but the judge ruled against him, writing in his argument, writing that his arguments, quote, lacked merit, Sentencing has not been scheduled. Box faced several years in prison, as each of his two felony convictions carries up to 5 years of imprisonment. And, you know, here is a guy who was offered a deal. He said, no, I want to go to trial. I want a jury trial. I want a judge, a bench trial. But the problem is he got the wrong judge. He absolutely got his wrong day. Wrong. He got the wrong judge.
And that is even an interesting statement by you, because this judge is a judge with senior status. And what that means is she's semi-retired. She doesn't take a full workload. They typically handle about 15% of the federal court's workload annually. So there, she didn't even have to be that one. Judge Roberts said that senior judges are eligible for retirement with full pay, but still continue to work, most in a part-time capacity. So, but they don't get additional compensation for their work. But this is, so her status as a senior court judge did not, meant that she didn't need to be the one that was on this case at all. And that even says that they chose her specifically so that, and I wonder how many others of the Jan 6 offenders were given to senior judges, because they don't carry the same weight as another judge. You know, that some of the federal court judges being appointed might be taken out of their appointment or you know, given
I'll tell you what it says to me.
Yes.
She could retire, but she just wants to be a pain in the butt to Donald Trump. And she's afraid if she resigns that her place is going to be, her seat is going to be given to a Trump judge. You know, Sharon, maybe it is time to get the federal government out of Washington, D.C. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. Let's move it somewhere else.
Well, don't you think also that it's time to consider the role of judges and that Congress needs to act? These judges are overreaching their constitutional duties. And they are legislating from the bench. This is one of those cases where he issued an executive order completely within his legal parameters of his office, and said, I just want to make sure that it's not just your word about citizenship. I just want to know for sure that you are a citizen. Give me a document. And she's saying, no, you can't require that document, not because it's against the law to require that document, not because the law doesn't say that you have to be a citizen. It's her personal opinion, really. And so she is putting her personal opinion into the law rather than deciding on what the law says. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, we call that legislating from the bench. And we know that court precedents is really has almost the same force and effect as law. So they are making laws through that judicial branch, and the Congress needs to say, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And anything that you've done in the past is not legal, because you can't do that. That's not within your right to make laws from the bench. And it's completely within the congressional right to do that. That was given to them by the Constitution. So that's my feeling on it, is that we need to rein these judges in, and it's Congress's duty to do that.
I agree. Big time, big time. Well, Sharon, let's get another break in. Why we have to. It's the law. And this is the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Angle. I'm Rick Trader. Go nowhere, Sharon, and I'll be back with more news and commentary right after this break.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest 3-in-1 sale ever with a limited edition product, a back in stock special, and a closeout deal you won't find anywhere else. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get our MyPillow bed sheets, only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings, regular $119.98, only $29.88. Once they're gone for good. How about our My Towels? They're finally back in stock, but not for long. Get a six-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And for the first time and the only time ever, get our limited edition premium My Pillows. They're made with Giza cotton and designer gusset. Queen $17.98, Kings only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get the best offers ever. Quantities are extremely limited, so order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader, and we are coming to you from the MyPillow Studios and MyStore Studios of the AUNTV network. If you are listening to Conservative Commandos on one of our 18 terrestrial radio stations or many, many, many internet outlets, you can actually watch our show. And all the shows that are part of the AUNTV network are like Roger Stone, Vanessa Susan, Tony Perkins, Alan West, Steve Bannon, by going to our website, aun-tv.com, aun-tv.com. Right below the banner, you'll see a red stripe that says Watch AUNTV Live. Click on it. It'll take you to our 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week stream on Rumble. Again, our website is aun-tv.com. Also, right below that, you're going to see a post that says Help AUNTV. Click on that. We need 100 patrons to pledge $30 a month to keep this show and the AUNTV network on the air. You know, we are dependent upon our listeners and viewers like you who watch us. You find a value in what we talk about here, find a value in the things that we talk about here. And we're just like NPR, PBS, except they used to get federal funds. They don't anymore, so that puts them in our category. We need the help and support from you. No one here at AUNTV Network makes a salary. This is 100% voluntarily run. However, we have bills and we pay our bills. That's our job here. We pay our bills and expansion. That's what the money is used for. So you're not paying to make Sharon or Rick rich by any means. In fact, I donate my entire Social Security check each and every month to keep this network going. But we do need help from viewers like you. Again, go to our website, aun-tv.com. Click on that post that says Help AUNTV. Become one of our 100 patrons. So Sharon, what else is on your radar screen?
I suppose this is on my radar screen because the person I'm running against in Nevada has taken money from the Soros brothers.
Oh, and nice.
Nice, right? And so Soros's Open Society has given $80 million to pro-terror groups.
Wow.
They found that these groups include Center for Third World Organizing, a militant partner of Ruckus Society, which trains activists in property destruction and sabotage during the 2020 riots, The Sunrise Movement, which endorsed the Antifa-linked Stop Cop City campaign, which activists currently face over 40 domestic terrorism charges and 60 racketeering indictments. They awarded $18 million to a movement for Black Lives, a group that authorized a radical guide that glorifies Hamas' October 7th massacre and instructs activists to use false IDs, blockades, and economic disruption. They also funneled more than $2.3 million into Al-Haq, a non-governmental organization, NGO, based on the West Bank, which is now Judea and Samaria. We don't call it that anymore. And also has ties to Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. So it's inside and outside the country that they are fomenting this terror. So, you know, all of that said, that I believe anybody who is taking money from those kinds of sources is probably at least turning a blind eye to what they do, if not agreeing with what they do.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. That's, you know, one of the things I'd love to see President Trump and Kash Patel and Pam Bondi get to is the foundations like the Tide Foundation, Soros, and God knows what the motivation for this man is. It's the only way that I could look at it is to destroy the United States the way it is. That's the only thing I can get at. But I agree, anybody that's taking money, you know, a lesson I learned from my mother a long time ago is you're judged by who you associate with. And it seems like anybody that associates with George Soros or any of his money, they're bad people. They're bad people, and they need to be pointed out.
You know, it's interesting how they always tell the truth about what they're about. And George Soros naming his foundation Open Society talks about globalism, doesn't it? No borders, everybody's one world order, the whole idea that we break down a society in order to make it a world society or a global society. And how do we do that? How does Soros think that's the best way to do it? It's through this terrorism. It's through hiring people to cause disruptions within societies that cause the reaction of military and police force to put down these kinds of terrorist insurrections. And of course, anytime that the military or the police come into a situation, it's often difficult to tell the innocent from the guilty in a situation like that, because they do get the useful idiots out to these protests. They may hire people to go in and get the protest started, but then some locals will come in and say, oh yeah, I think they're right. And they'll pick up a sign, or maybe they get paid for picking up the sign. They haven't got any idea where this is going. They're just there because they got paid for it, or they thought that sounded good, and so they stood up for that cause. So it's very difficult when someone like that then gets caught up in the police dragnet, and then that person becomes the focal point rather than what started it in the first place. You know, we were just talking about Jan 6. That's what happened, is that they had terrorists that were inciting the crowd, not inciting them to violence, but just say directing them, you need to go to the Capitol? Do you need to go inside the Capitol? You need to, you know, they invited them in. And these people were just going for a, they thought they were going for a tour of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And what they got caught up in was a dragnet, not for the terrorists. Those people, on by and large, escaped. We do know some of them that started that. But there were a lot of innocent people caught up in that dragnet, prosecuted for crimes that they weren't even involved in. They were just touring the Capitol. They were just there. There are people on watch lists that weren't even there, but they had a ticket to go, and they found out that they were in the DC area during that time, and now they've been questioned. So it has really opened up such a broad investigation that there's been pushback then from those of us who are freedom loving, saying, you can't do this to innocent citizens. But it was all started, and I think we could probably trace it back if we wanted to something like Soros's Open Society. It was an attempt to cause domestic violence in order to disrupt a peaceful society and move us forward into an open society.
Well, Sharon, before we get to the end of this segment, which is the end of the show, before we start our interviews, you had mentioned that your opponent in a race for Secretary of State has taken money from the Tides Foundation. Why would somebody who's running for Secretary of State in a state like Nevada, what would ideologically, how would they mesh with the Tides Foundation and George Soros?
Well, I need to correct you. The money actually comes from individuals. They are two of Soros' sons, not this Alexander, who is with the Open Society Foundation, but these other
it's
two
all
sons.
The money
it
comes
is
from
all,
one big pot. It's
to
the
me,
Soros
it's all
money.
The same
and it
source.
Doesn't matter if it's from George himself or one of his sons.
And this goes back to 2006, I believe. I'll have to check my dates. But George Soros started a Secretary of State's project. And this project was to get Secretary of State's into the battleground states. So it was just a very limited project where he would put in people chosen because they were attorneys first, because they were aligned with his ideology, the Democrat ideology second. But really, I believe their directive was probably to weaponize, centralize, and politicize that office. And so there you have, it's a continuation of the Soros Secretary of State's project. He said since then abandoned it, it's dormant, but he started another project, which is the Attorney General's project. And those attorney generals have that same agenda. And because they work so closely with the Secretary of State in the prosecution of election crimes, it has become that you need both. You need the Attorney General and the Secretary of State to keep those prosecutions down. So I believe there,
America.
It does. And of course, we talked about this open society. The underlying purpose for it is to weaken America so that they can have a global society, weaken the borders. That's why this judge that we've been talking about has said, no, just your say-so is good enough. You don't have to have documentation, and has kicked the executive order out based on that, because it's another part of this weakening our system, the basic system that ensures our freedom.
Sharon, I wish we had more time because that triggers another thought, how people that are coming here illegally are not coming here to assimilate into our society. They're coming here to bring their society from wherever they come from here and make our society theirs. But that's for another time because we got to go for break. And right after this break, we're going to be playing some of the best of interviews here on the Conservative Commandos. I'm Rick Schrader, my co-host is Sharon Angle. We'll be back with those interviews right after this break.
It's kind of fun how it all
Sharon, before
connects,
you
isn't it?
talk, stop the
Yeah.
record.
Okay.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with Sharon Angle and yours truly, Rick Schrader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studio, the Maestro Studios of the AUN TV network. And Sharon, this next guest, I've had communications with for quite some time, and I said, Frank, if you ever get the Skype worked out, we're going to make you a regular guest here on Conservative Commandos, and we're improving it. Sharon, please make that introduction.
It's always my pleasure to introduce Frank Salvato, who is a co-host of the Underground USA podcast. His writing has been recognized by the U.S. House International Relations Committee and the Japan Center for Conflict Prevention. His analysis has been published by the American Enterprise Institute, the Washington Times, National File, and Accuracy in Media, and is nationally syndicated. Frank appeared on The O'Reilly Factor on Fox News Channel and is the author of six monographs examining internal and external threats facing our country. He can be heard twice weekly on the Captain's America Third Watch radio program, syndicated nationally on the Salem Broadcasting Network and Genesis Communications affiliate stations. Frank, welcome back to the Conservative Commandos radio show.
Always a pleasure to spend some time.
It's our pleasure, Frank. And we want to discuss an article you wrote, The Left's Stupidity Games. I'm not even sure where to start on this, but you start with DEI. So we'll start there with you. So let's talk about this stuff.
There are so many of these stupidity games that it is hard to know where to begin. But DEI is the chief among them. For them to say that it's about creating fairness and opportunity is just a flat-out lie. DEI is a discriminatory practice that elevates special interest groups above the whole. It's, you know, it's especially, and this isn't a popular thing to say because people get a little squeamish about it, but if you're a white heterosexual male, in the Western culture, in the woke Western culture, you are the demon. You are the person where all blame lies, and you shall be demonized from this point forward. Well, when you remove the DEI philosophy, that ideology from the mix, and you create opportunity for all on an equal plane instead of equity of outcome, we get back to being colorblind, which is kind of where we were. I don't, maybe everybody else's experience isn't the same as mine, but we were kind of there at the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s, where we were moving beyond the color of somebody's skin and we were actually looking at the content of their character and whether they had merit to hold the station that they were holding. You know, with Barack Obama coming into power, suddenly we were all racist again, unless you were anything other than a white heterosexual in the world.
Well, I think you're right, Frank. I know we have always been kind of there in the West. It has always been shocking to me that when you get a little bit east of the Mississippi, you start to run into this stuff, but for the most part, we were pretty much everybody's okay with us. And then Obama hit. And that, I guess that was the one where, you know, they started making a problem of something that wasn't a problem, calling it out as a problem when Obama got in and he was going to straighten that out. But he really didn't, did he, Frank?
No. As a matter of fact, he supercharged it. you know, he supercharged it. He wasn't truthful about the past. He helped facilitate things like the 1619 Project and institutionalized racism and law enforcement, which the numbers just aren't there to validate that statement. Right. Even if you go to the most jaded set of numbers from the FBI in the history, there's no proof of that whatsoever. Yet the media ran with it. Yeah, I like to remind people, and it's just something that history isn't teaching anymore, probably because we're just not teaching history anymore in elementary schools and high schools, and we absolutely are teaching it in higher education. That's all indoctrination today. But we're the only country on the face of the earth throughout the history of man who ever went to war to say that slavery, racism, it's all wrong. It's all wrong. You know, we count 600,000 Americans who put their lives on the line, and many of them giving the ultimate sacrifice to say, this is wrong and we're not going to do this anymore. Even the framers, which the left likes to demonize all the time, at their core, whether they were trapped in the institutions of the time or not, were saying, we've got to get rid of this.
Well, I think, as you say, we're the most impartial country. I mean, we're the melting pot. And we've had our little hiccups through history. And as you say that, we even fought a big war just to say this is wrong. We once in a while have to do a little course correction. I mean, Martin Luther King said, you need a course correction on this. But then it seems like this has just gone completely off its rails, and we are back to what I feel like is even worse than before we fought the war, if that's possible. I mean, I'm hearing things like people that are taking in Haitian refugees now are saying, this is the greatest thing I ever did. They do my laundry, they do my cooking, they clean my house. Everybody should have a Haitian. What? I just want to bang my head on the table over a, you know, it's just nuts to hear that kind of commentary.
Yeah, there's a meme going around that's addressing the issue at the southern border and the fact that we're closing it because there's a way to come to our country and a way not to come to our country. Mm-hmm. And it says it juxtaposes the days of slavery in the United States. It says, but if we free the slaves, who will pick our cotton? And the next panel is today, and it says, well, if we don't have illegal immigrants, who will harvest our vegetables? That's the kind of mentality that, you know, it's an entitled mentality that really shouldn't exist here in the 21st century here in the United States, but it does. And why? Because the left operates off chaos. They need to have the crisis. It's an Alinsky rule. They need to have the crisis to create the chaos so they can introduce the solution, which is always something that they're in complete control of. You know, and it's the transformative power that the left wants to project onto the United States, and it's a transformative power that has absolutely nothing to do with individualism or freedom. It has to do with we doing what we're told, wear your mask, get vaccinated, don't question what we're doing. Spending is good. Open borders are better, and we should listen to the globalists. That's what they want. But a free-thinking nation that's built on liberty, freedom, and individualism, we get to say no, and we get to question things. And that's why you see them coming 100% against free speech. They don't like to call it that. They like to say they're promoting fact-checking and disinformation and misinformation, but the fact is they're trying to control what's being said and thought, and that's something we all have to rebel against. Ooh, that's a revolutionary action.
Well, what you're talking about is the insults that we have been receiving on our end. I think the first one that just shocked me was for President Obama to say that we were ignorant, clinging to our guns and religion. That was, I mean, it was the most insulting thing to the majority of our country. And they have now so badly infiltrated many of our institutions, the military. I can't think of any institution that is more level. In fact, boot camp is all about making everybody equal. You don't come in with your daddy's name. You don't, you know, you come in there and you don't even get to keep your own underwear. I mean, you're just there. You don't get to keep your hair, your sideburns, your mustache, your anything. You are leveled. Everybody becomes the same in the military, and then they build you into a fighting unit where everybody watches everybody's back. But that's not the way it is anymore in the military. It's just astounding.
Well, hopefully with Pete Hegseth, we're turning that corner and getting back to it. The cancellation of DEI practices at the Pentagon was just so important. So important. Mm-hmm. And the idea of purging ideologues, whether they're civilian employees or appointments, or whether they're wearing the uniform. You know, just because you're wearing a uniform doesn't mean that you're not susceptible to that kind of indoctrination and thinking. We've got to get back to our military being the fighting machine that's feared around the world and revered by people who are oppressed, and leave the nation building, which was something that Obama wanted to do so badly with our military, to the State Department. You know, our war machine should be a war machine, mm-hmm. you know. And not an NGO organization that's building hospitals and this, that, and the other. It's a wonderful thing to do. Don't get me wrong. You know, you want to help develop a nation. You want us to be seen as the good guys on the world stage. That's great. But that's what USAID is for. That's what the State Department is for. It's not what our warriors are for. Our warriors are there to protect the United States, our assets, our interests, and our people and our country. So let them have that singular job. It's like the Secret Service. How about we just have them do protection details for the elected officials who warrant it, and let the FBI and the Treasury Department deal with counterfeiting and everything else. Singular issues, singular focus always makes for a better apparatus.
Well, and I think that is that idea of peace through strength. When you've got a focused military, everybody knows it. And when you don't, everybody knows that too.
Frank Silvato is our guest. He's the host of the Underground USA podcast. He also puts out a newsletter, Underground USA, which I'm proud to get every week. And Frank, thank you for holding through that break. We appreciate your time.
Anytime and always.
The left stupidity games. You know, Frank, DEI, I think what DEI did is DEI gave give license for liberals to out-stupid each other with the next wacky idea. They try to out-wacky each other, Frank. I mean, they got to one level, then a deeper level, then a deeper level, and it seemed like they had to out-wacky, out-stupid each other, and this is what's put us in the position that we are in right now. How do you feel about that statement, Frank?
Well, it's accurate. I think it's the cause of it is what we have to look at. And I think the constitutional illiteracy mm-hmm. of the far left and the tolerance of it by the American people is something that allows mm-hmm. that kind of stupidity, you call it wackiness, I just call it stupidity, to go forward in the halls of power, which are supposed to be the halls that sanctify what our founding documents and what we're supposed to be about as Americans. If you get elected to office, a prerequisite should be a pretty decent understanding of how it works. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean how the political parties work, although you should know that if you're going to go through, again, Sharon knows this very well, if you're going through the process of trying to get a nomination, you better know how the political parties work. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't have anything to do with governance. There's a set of rules laid out by the U.S. Constitution, and they are reined in by the Bill of Rights, what the government can and can't do, what they can step on, where they can go. There are limitations. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights are a set of limitations for our federal government, each branch. And it seems to me the people who are doing the wackiness, the stupidity, they either don't have a solid working knowledge of what those rules are and how government's supposed to work, or they just don't care.
Frank, I think the American people are too nice for their own good because they accept this stuff. And they want everybody to like them. They don't want to be insulting. They don't want to look at some girl with pink hair, tattoos all over her body, rings coming out of her nose, her eyebrow, her mouth, and say, "You're weird." You know, they're just afraid to say what things really are because they don't want to be insulting. And so it has gotten so far when you point out the stupid, wacky ideas for what they are, stupid, wacky ideas, then you're the demon. You're the demon. And I think we've gotten to this point. Americans are just too nice. We should have been tough parents from the beginning. And so, and pointed out the weirdness, the wackiness. My gosh, you go through the mall today. Go through the mall today. And it's like going to a freak show, the way people dress and what people do to them with the rings and the tattoo and the hair and the clothing. I mean, I was in a hospital a couple of weeks ago, and this girl walked in with a pair of jeans. And there was not much thread there, Frank. They were all ripped up. I'm serious. From the top of the hips to the ankles, these pants were all ripped up. So you know what I said to her? "Well, I'm glad you survived the grizzly bear attack." We're so nice. We've accepted this. And the other thing that gets me about our culture today, and you kind of alluded to it in your article here, and I'll tell you where I'm going from. You know, for years and years and years, at least since I was a child and could understand things in the late 50s and through the 60s, it was integration, integration, integration. We had to end segregation. But what has happened now? Segregation is coming back. But it's not... The segregation isn't coming back through the white race. It's coming back from people of color. You know, there are Harvard, there were classes and there were dorms for African American students only. Whites were prohibited.
See, I'm gonna drill down a little bit further.
Yeah.
And saying you have to look at the hierarchy that's instituting this lunacy. There are a lot of white people in there who are doing this. So it's really not a race thing. It is a power position ideology type of thing. So
Let me stop you. I hate to interrupt guests. But again, I think this is because of the wacky stupidity that they try to out wacky and out stupid each other. You know, they fall over themselves to be nice. They fall over each other, come up with the next wacky, stupid idea.
We have been told.
Including a lot of white people.
We've been told for as long as I've been alive that it's impolite to discuss politics and religion and current events at the dinner table, that you shouldn't bring it up with friends because people might think differently than you do. That's where this started. This let's be polite thing. There are ways to express yourself and talk about politics, religion, current events, important things that aren't abrasive, that aren't offensive. You have to use your language to do this, and you have to make sure that you can have that conversation. But I say this at the end of every single podcast that I have. If you have these conversations, we all find out we have more in common, whether it's the girl with the ripped up jeans or the person with the 30 piercings on her ear. we find out that we've got more in common than we do in difference, and that spotlights these deep state bureaucrats who thrive, whose only ability to maintain power is to divide us into these demographics so they can cobble together 51% for election. If we say no to that, and we're naturally, organically diverse, that's what a melting pot is. That's what E Pluribus Unum is supposed to be, out of many one. When we do that, then this deep state bureaucracy that wants to make sure that we're angry with each other and we don't like this and that person's outside and I'm inside and we can't have this anymore, they lose their power because they can't balkanize us to get that 51% for the elections. That's when populism comes and explodes on the scene. Exactly what Donald Trump did.
Frank, in your article, well, before I go there, let me say this. Sharon will tell you, I love everything that flies. Flying has been one of my passions in life. In fact, many years ago, a friend and I built a little airplane called an ultralight airplane. And for those of you that don't know what ultralights are, they're lawn chairs with wings that are propelled by snowmobile engines. Now, after you build something, you want to see how it works, right? Well, I ended up flying this ultralight from New Jersey to Florida to Texas to California, through Canada to Alaska to the Arctic Circle and back to New Jersey. And in doing so, I kind of made myself a little minor star in the minor world of sport aviation. The best thing that I got out of that whole experience, Frank, is I met some of the best people you can imagine. And some of those people were the Tuskegee Airmen. Yeah. You know, I was fortunate to meet them while they were still alive. I also met many, many, many women, WACs, who served in the WASP as farrier pilots. And I spoke with a guy by the name of Gabby Grabowski, who was the top American ace in the European theater in the Second World War. And I said, Gabby, I says, you know, I know as a pilot, it can get pretty hairy. You know, you can get real white knuckle. I can't imagine flying an airplane and having somebody shoot at you.
Yeah.
Can't imagine it. So where I'm getting at is the Tuskegee Airmen, in my opinion, they were real heroes. And I think they would have been great pilots even if the services were integrated at that day. The women Air Force service pilots, they did a yeoman's job. But I'll tell you what has happened today is, once again, these groups have been segregated. They've been segregated. The Tuskegee Airmen were great pilots, but it seems like whenever you talk about aviation history, you got to put in there the Tuskegee pilots. You just can't talk about the great pilots of World War II. When you talk about the WASP, well, now, you know, the reason they were ferrying aircraft is at the time, we did not want our women in combat. Now, to be fair to everybody, we got to put our women in combat. And some of those women have suffered. Some of those women were taken prisoner during the Gulf War. And some of the treatment that they went through is almost unspeakable. And the things that were done to them, if the perpetrators were on the streets of New York or Philadelphia, deserved to be in jail for long periods of time. But this political correctness, Frank, this political correctness, oh, whenever you talk about aviation, you got to include the Tuskegee Airmen. Whenever you talk about baseball, you got to include a conversation about Jackie Robinson. I mean, here we go. We're in another couple of weeks. We're coming up on the Super Bowl. You know what the big word? Oh, two African-American quarterbacks. I mean, when you look at the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, he looks more white than black. But the conversation is another matchup between African-American quarterbacks. Frank, what I'm getting at is I would love to stop talking about race. Well, I would love to stop separating and integrating everything.
Then we need to stop talking about race. There's someone there who is a regent at the University of California system by the name of Ward Connerly, who I'm friends with, and that's what he's been saying for almost 20 years. You want to erase race? Erase it. Stop talking about it. When we're constantly going back, even if we're taking issue with it, we're still talking about race.
Yep.
You know, the point that I was making about the Tuskegee Airmen and the WASPs in my latest article was that DEI co-opted it, and they tried to make it their issue to be able to pontificate on and say, this is something we're pushing in our training. And somebody who makes these decisions, and I think that he would fall into your category of the wacky, made a decision that, well, you know, if he wants to get rid of DEI, then we got to get rid of this history. We can't teach this lesson anymore. So that's the way we've got to be. That's disingenuous at every level. You know, it's part of the history of the Air Force. You teach the history of the Air Force. You don't need to mention race. You don't need to mention gender, you know, but you don't shy away from it. Why? It's reality. So we say what it is. The Tuskegee Airmen, yeah, they were a black squadron. They did great work. God bless them. I'm glad they were there. The women of the WASPs, excellent. I commend them. They did a great service. They were all part of the team. But as Americans, we don't need to say, well, see, if we didn't have affirmative action, if we didn't have equal rights, hey, we have an all-volunteer army now. If a woman is a great fighter and can and make sure that she has all of the levels that anybody should be have on the field, and this is coming from somebody who was in the fire service and worked alongside women who were just as capable as any man that I took as a partner going in there, then fine, outstanding. But it has to be based on merit, not your gender, not your race, not your religion. It has to be merit-based. And I think that's where, you know, if you're reading Donald Trump's stuff right, that's where we want to go. It's the disingenuous players out there who are trying to make into something that it's not, and they're the ones that keep trying to advance the balkanization of the United States into demographics based on the stuff that they can put together to cobble together 51%.
You know, Frank, as I said, I met many Tuskegee Airmen. I met a lot of WASP. They were all fine, great people. Yeah. They really were. They're really fine, great people. And I agree with you. I especially agree with you. If you want to stop talking about race, you stop talking about race. If you want to end the divide between the races, you know what you do, Frank? You treat everyone the way you want to be treated.
Absolutely.
That ends it all. That ends it all right there and then.
But, yeah, and take all the boxes off the forms. Who cares? If you're applying for a job in my corporation, why do I care? If you have the merit to be there and the ability to be there and you're the best candidate for the job, then that's the way it should be. Orchestras do it all the time. Everybody auditions behind a screen. No one gets to see who's playing because they want the best person for that position. Why does it stop there with the arts?
Frank Zavada, we want to thank you for joining us. Enjoy the time with you, Frank. But before you leave, please give our audience the good information, how they could follow you, read the things that you write, listen to your radio show. Time's
anything,
yours.
Everything that we do, anything that we produce is at undergroundusa.com. As far as the podcast goes, it's anywhere podcasts can be heard. But the best way to get the straight portal straight into your email inbox, circumventing the censors and the fact checkers, is to go to undergroundusa.com.
As I do. Frank Zavada, again, thank you so much for joining us. Take care and God bless.
Anytime and always.
And you are listening to and watching The Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel and yours truly, Rick Trader. On the other side, we're going to have Matthew Gagnon join us. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Policy Institute. We're going to talk about California's suspension of environmental regulations should be permanent. Don't go away. We'll be back with our next guest.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest 3-in-1 sale ever. With a limited edition product, a back-in-stock special, and a closeout deal you won't find anywhere else. So go to MyPillow.com or call that number on your screen. Use your promo code to get our MyPillow bed sheets only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings, regular $119.98, only $29.88. Once they're gone for good. How about our My Towels? They're finally back in stock, but not for long. Get a six-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And for the first time and the only time ever, get our limited edition premium My Pillows. They're made with Giza cotton and designer gusset, queen $17.98, kings only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get the best offers ever. Quantities are extremely limited, so order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commanders Radio Show with Sharon Engel and yours truly, Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the My Store Studios of the AUNTV Network. And Sharon, our next guest is with him. It's great to meet him, but please make that introduction.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Matthew Gagnon, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Policy Institute, a free market policy think tank based in Portland, Maine. Matt has also been a columnist for the Bangor Daily News and hosts the WGAN Morning News, the highest rated news talk radio program in Southern Maine. Prior to joining Maine Policy Institute, Matt spent roughly a decade in Washington, D.C., working for the Republican Governors Association, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and on Capitol Hill. He has been involved in more than 100 high-profile political races in 49 states and won industry recognition, being named by Campaign and Election magazine as one of the top campaign strategists in the country in 2013. Matt, welcome to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, we invited you because you've written a great article that really hits home for us. California's suspension of environmental regulations should be permanent. I couldn't say a stronger thank you for writing this and amen to that. Let's go through some of those things and talk about what has happened in California. It's basically, what you're talking about in this article has been the demise of that once great state of California. And really, it's a cautionary tale for the rest of the United States, I would say.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it actually makes a lot of sense to sort of start at the beginning. We're obviously talking about this because of the wildfires and what's been taking place in Southern California. Mm-hmm. That's really why I wrote the article, because it was talking about sort of how do you recover from that and what might be standing in the way. But if you back up, California's had problems for a long time. This isn't brand new. This isn't something that's all that surprising. People who actually live in the state would tell you that they have a tremendous housing shortage, which has caused prices to skyrocket. It's impossible to find affordable housing basically anywhere in the state these days. I've seen a number of studies that have tried to estimate exactly how many houses short they are, and it's anywhere from 2.6 million to 3.2 million or somewhere in between. So they just don't build things. They just don't produce what needs to be produced. And anybody who's familiar with markets and capitalism knows if there's demand for something, people will try to fill it, and they will fill it by building more widgets or creating more houses or whatever it is that you're trying to talk about in a market. And if they're not, there's something wrong. There's something that's interfering with that. And if, in California, the answer to the question of what's interfering with that is predictably the government. Gavin Newsom just issued an executive order in response to these wildfires, basically trying to find a way to help people rebuild quickly. And what he did in this executive order is he suspended the California Environmental Quality Act for the people who are rebuilding. This is a pretty infamous program, some regulations in California that have been around since the 1970s. And for decades, they've been strangling the state and anybody's attempt to put an addition on their garage, let alone try to have 10,000 houses built. And by suspending these, I think that Newsom is acknowledging that there's something standing in the way. It's going to make projects take a lot longer than they should, be much more expensive than they should, and basically make the whole rebuilding process fail. So in doing this, I think he inadvertently kind of acknowledges that there's a really huge problem in California that needs to be solved. The problem, of course, is that he gets halfway there and doesn't actually understand the true lesson, which is that they shouldn't be there in the first place, and they should be permanently repealed. And that would go a long way towards solving a lot of California's housing problems.
Well, I think that is a deficit that the Democrats have at large. They get about halfway there. They speak half of what really needs to happen. And that encourages us, Matt. We get encouraged and we think, oh, well, these guys aren't so bad as we thought they were. But they really are, because it is that kind of halfway stuff that's gotten us in the trouble that we're in.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you're trying to be charitable, a lot of this stuff comes from, I guess, a desire to help or do the right thing or whatnot, right? The whole law in general began with Ronald Reagan. Most people don't know this. He's the one that signed the California Environmental Quality Act in 1970, and there was actually a Republican legislature in California at the time. And when it began, it wasn't really that much of a problem. They were trying to find ways of making sure that when you build stuff that you didn't do something insane, like, you know, dump mercury in the water or something. But what happened is, over the years, a lot of do-gooder politicians in California, and in California it became one party that really did this, used that law and just built more requirements on top of more requirements on top of more requirements. And now when you try to engage in a building project in California, it can take you months, years, and your price can go up by 25, 50, 75%. And it just takes the bottom out of any developer that's trying to actually produce anything, making it not worth it. And so when it's not worth it, nothing is built and the price goes up.
And you asked the question, which is an interesting question, and I want you, I know we've kind of talked about it in general, but I want you to really talk about this. The question is, if these regulations are an unnecessary hindrance for those recovering from the wildfires, why are they necessary at all?
I think it's a pretty important question. I think it's a pretty common sense question. You know, I guess really what I would get two is the core of the issue here. They're either important or they're not. And if they're important, when someone is trying to, install some stairs in an apartment complex of theirs, and they have to wait a year and a half for the approvals and the permits to come through and the environmental studies to be done and the reports to be produced before they can do that kind of thing, why is it not important when we're going to be doing that times 10,000, when we're going to be having all of these homes, all of these apartment complexes, all of these businesses rebuilt? Because if it is important here, it should be important there. And I think the real answer is that it's actually not important. And it's the right thing to tell these people when they're rebuilding that they don't have to put up with that. They don't have to worry about this particular set of regulations ruining their, you know, chances of maybe rebuilding their home that they lost. And imagine being one of these people, right? And having to wait like 2 years before you can actually move back into the house that was burned down in a California wildfire that was largely the responsibility of politicians who didn't do what they were supposed to do to make sure this kind of thing didn't happen in the first place. It would turn you insane. I can't imagine being that kind of person. And that's ultimately why Newsom did this. The thing that makes me really mad about it, Sharon, is that what he's trying to do here is he's trying to kind of wrap himself in the problem solver cloak and make himself look like someone who's, you know, helping people to rebuild. He wants to become the hero. And now these environmental regulations are easily dispensed with when it makes Gavin Newsom into a hero. But in any other context, he's happy to champion them, and he says that they're great and we should continue to use them, maybe just reform them and tweak them a little bit.
Well, and that then begs the political question. Are they really truly interested in affordable housing? I know we're having this same discussion here in Nevada. We need affordable housing. And they're building apartments like crazy, but nobody can afford $2,300 a month. That's not affordable housing. And so then you have to say, well, they really aren't building affordable housing. They're just building out. This is about making more money. And that's why they don't really want to repeal these permanently, because it would it's kind of cut into the market. You know how politics works. So take me back from this wall here, where I'm on the ledge and I'm saying this is all a political problem, and it's not going to be solved at all.
Well, I'd love to walk you back from the ledge, but I live in the greater Portland region of Maine, where we're doing the exact same thing. I mean, it's interesting that most of the country actually has the same problem. It's not just a California thing. They may be one of the worst offenders, but basically everywhere in the country has some sort of a housing crisis right now. And it's always the same things that create it at the end of the day. It's funny that you described the issue the way that you did, Sharon, because honestly, the developers are going to find a way to make money no matter what happens. Whether you have these regulations, you don't have these regulations, they're going to build what they can to make a profit. I think that this is so insidious, because what it's ultimately done is it has disincentivized anybody from making a project that would actually be reasonably affordable, because the costs have been piled up on them so much that having like a big complex that actually might be reasonably affordable doesn't make any sense anymore. Here in Portland, Maine, we have things like inclusionary zoning, we have rent control, we have a Green New Deal, a proposal in the city that just inflates costs to such a degree that why would I make a low income type, large scale housing project when I could do condos, or I could create a larger complex for wealthier individuals and make my margin there. So by trying to help and making it so unaffordable to do this, all they've done is they've incentivized exactly the wrong kind of housing that they don't want to incentivize. And we're all complaining about that. That's not a real partisan issue.
Well, and here's the upshot of the whole thing. Our homeless population has increased. And the reason is because it's cheaper to couch surf, it's cheaper to have a cardboard box, it's less responsibility, less having to worry about bills, less having to consider how do I make ends meet. If I just go on the homeless market, get a shower down there at, join the gym and get a shower once in a while, sleep in my car, whatever it is, they have priced themselves clear into another problem is what we're seeing.
I think that they've so ruined the economics of this that people make rational decisions. And if your rational decision is to pursue a path that, sort of makes you more able to afford your life over here, and it's, less than advantageous, maybe you're a homeless person, maybe you're in Section 8 housing, whatever it is, you're going to take it. It's, people are rational economic actors. They're going to do what's in their own financial best interest, which is one of the reasons why the United States and states like California, their welfare systems are so backwards and upside down. They're incentivizing all the wrong kind of behavior, and they're basically creating the very thing that they purport to solve. The affordable housing one drives me nuts, because the government solution to that is always government-centric, taxpayer-funded, low-income housing projects. And they build these things, they take forever, they're terrible, nobody wants to live in them, and there's nowhere near enough. And, the market is demanding something that they can't possibly satisfy and provide. And so people end up doing other things, whether that's being homeless or having other options, moving further out. I mean, it increases urban sprawl. You want to look at the problems of California. One of the big ones is that everything is spread out like that. And that's because people keep going further and further away because it's the last affordable thing, and you commute in 45 minutes or an hour. When I lived in Washington, I considered doing that. I was not really making a heck of a lot of money at the time. And in order to work in the city, the only place I could really think about living that made any sense whatsoever was like almost an hour away. And it was an insane commute to come in. That's the decision we're making people do right now because of our policies.
Absolutely correct. It's just an amazing thing to me that you and I can sit here and talk about this, and in 10 minutes we can solve the problem.
Yep.
And we elect people like Gavin Newsom. I should not say that. I did not elect him. I did not vote for him. But, you know, people like Gavin Newsom are elected and they pat us on the head and say, we'll solve this. But the solution they come up with takes months, if not years, and it's never the correct one. It's mind-boggling to me. And because of that, we're going to go to a commercial break, and I'll let Rick take over. We are coming to you from the Conservative Commandos Network studios and around the world on the internet with TalkStream Live, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, NetTalk America, and AM/FM 24/7. I'm Sharon Engel here with my co-host, Rick Trader, and we've been talking with our special guest, Matthew Gagnon, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Policy Institute, about an article he wrote, California's Suspension of Environmental Regulations Should Be Permanent. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest 3-in-1 sale ever. With a limited edition product, a back-in-stock special, and a closeout deal you won't find anywhere else. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get our MyPillow bed sheets, only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings, regular $119.98, only $29.88. Once they're gone for good. How about our My Towels? They're finally back in stock, but not for long. Get a six-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And for the first time and the only time ever, get our limited edition premium My Pillows. They're made with Giza cotton and designer gusset. Queen $17.98, King's only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get the best offers ever. Quantities are extremely limited, so order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with Sharon Engel and yours truly, Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the MyStore Studios of the AUN-TV network. And speaking of the AUN network, if you want to watch shows like The Stone Zone with Roger Stone, The Narcissist's Podcast, The Joe Messina Show, More Money with Stephen Moore, James O'Keefe Media, Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Colonel Alan West, Steadfast and Loyal. Hey, then you're at the right place right here with us, the Conservative Commandos on the AUN-TV network. I want to thank our guest, Matt Gagnon, for staying with us. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Policy Institute, and we're talking about California's suspension of environmental regulations should be permanent. Hey, Matt, thank you for holding through that break. We really do appreciate your time, sir.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Hey, Matt, before we go any further, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Maine Policy Center?
Yeah, Maine Policy Institute is one of, more than 50 think tanks across the country that work on individual state policy issues for places like Maine, California, Texas, Colorado, wherever. We've been around for about 22 years, and we work primarily in Augusta on things affecting Maine policy from the state side of things. We do touch on some federal policy, but a lot of what we do actually is very similar to what we're talking about today, talking about housing regulations, talking about taxes, talking about sort of the unintended consequences of a lot of very silly government decisions. That's kind of what my day job's all about.
All right. You know, Matt, in your article, you talk about crazies. And you're right, and I quote you, sir, like most of the rest of the country, California has largely self-created housing crisis. Well, I think creating crisis is a California thing. They've created a power crisis, an auto crisis, a tax crisis. So now they have the housing crisis. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know how optimistic you are about California not only suspending their regulations, but permanently suspending regulations and do the things that it needs to do to rebuild California. And I'll tell you where I'm coming from that. On May 13th, 1985, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a liberal-run city, they haven't had a Republican mayor in my lifetime, and that's a pretty darn long lifetime now. But there was a group called MOVE, and they were radical, back to the nature type group. They had two row homes that they barricaded off. There was some reports that the children were being abused, rats, roaches, place was infested with them. So the city sent license and inspection out to do an investigation of these accusations, child abuse. They wouldn't let license and inspection in. So then the police showed up. And what ensued was a 5-hour running gun battle. Over 5,000 rounds of ammunition was fired, was exchanged. The mayor at that time, Wilson Good, ended the situation by dropping a bomb on the top of the house. The bomb exploded, put the house on fire, put the neighboring houses on fire. 151 houses burnt down before Wilson Good let the fire company go in to put the fire out. Now, why I'm pessimistic about lessons learned in California? Do you know who are the people of Philadelphia reelected as the mayor the next election? Wilson Good. Wilson Good. Now, Matt, 5 years ago, there was the Paradise Fire in California. 10,000 houses burnt down in that fire. You know how many have been rebuilt 5 years later? About 2,500. About 2,500 out of 10,000. And speaking to some of the people, because we broadcast up in that area, we got towers up in that area. And speaking to some of the people, they say part of it's the regulations. It's the regulations. So Matt, what makes you think that the Southern California fires are finally going to get these people in California like Gavin Newsom to finally come to their senses and say, we got to do things differently? I mean, we had the Paradise fires. Now we've got the fires in Southern California, and these fires aren't unique. It seems like every year California is on fire.
They are. To be very clear, I'm not optimistic at all. I hate to be the rain cloud on our conversation, but I'm really not. But with a caveat, I'll add a little caveat to my pessimism about this. I think the main reason I'm not very optimistic is because I have two eyes and I can see that California is at this point a dystopia, and they continue to send back exactly the wrong kind of people doing the exact kind of wrong kind of things. The little twinge, the little tiny bit of optimism I have is not about like in the next year or two. It's in the longer term for California. In the longer term for California, someday they will emerge from this. They will. I really do believe that someday they will emerge from this when it really does get so bad that they have no option. I mean, look at Argentina right now and what's going on down there with Javier Milei and everything that's happening in that country. It got so bad that they elected basically a guy who wants to entirely destroy the state, which is fantastic. I love it. You know, you can go to America, though, and you can look at examples here. It's not quite that dramatic, but if you go to the, you know, New York City in the 1980s and early 1990s, you see a crumbling social fabric. I mean, you couldn't take the subway without feeling like you were going to get mugged or perhaps, you know, physically assaulted. You have graffiti everywhere. You have prostitution everywhere. You have a city that's just is falling apart. And at some level, you know, people got so fed up with it that they turned to Mayor Rudy Giuliani and said, please, for the love of all that is holy, clean this up for us. Please do this. And there was a smashing success in doing so, which really kind of carried that city through for multiple decades. Now, they've obviously slipped back since, and this is kind of the pattern we see. Right, is, you know, you fix things get better, and then you have the same problems that created it in the first place reemerging because the do-gooders come back again and say, well, we can make this really good society just a little bit better if you just listen to us and we institute these regulations, we have these new laws, etc., and it doesn't work. But That doesn't mean it can't change. And I do think it can, but it really is going to require the people in California being fed up to such a degree that they demand change.
Well, Matt, it seems like these Southern California fires are probably, they're going to be one of the, if not the most expensive disaster in our country's history, one of them. And I've got a solution. And I want to put this out there for our friends out there in California, because I do have a solution. Off the coast of California is 1 billion barrels of oil, a couple billions of cubic feet of natural gas. Matt, they have the resources to rebuild, is what I'm getting at. But again, they've got to change their mindset. They got to change their thinking. They got to do what they said they don't want to do. Oh, they want to go to the American people. They want to go to Sharon, Nevada, Matt in Maine, Rick in New Jersey, and everywhere else. And they want us to make them whole again when they have the ability to make themselves whole.
Yeah, no, they do indeed. And if you want to start listing the things that California has for advantages that it isn't exploiting, you can talk about the gigantic deposits of rare earth materials that they have sitting under the earth that they refuse to allow themselves to go mine because it would be a devastating environmental problem. You know, they don't do that kind of thing. And instead, now we offshore all production of those types of materials, which are essential to circuits and everything we do in our modern age, to China. And we have them do it, which, you know, I think feeds us something like 95% of the rare earth materials that we actually use. Great idea. Awesome. And sitting right there in California is a gold mine, literal gold mine for them. And they could exploit it and they don't. And that's repeated in, you know, so many different ways, issue after issue in that state.
You know, when you were talking with Sharon about this California Environmental Quality Act, and you said it was actually signed by Ronald Reagan, doesn't it prove the road to hell is paved with good intentions?
It certainly does.
I mean, that's the thought. Ronald Reagan would be rolling in the grave with that. And I used to think that the only mistake that Ronald Reagan made was when he granted amnesty to 3 million people. But maybe this is number two.
I think it's a similar logic, right? It really presupposes good intentions in the people who would follow up that act. I mean, you talk about the amnesty that he sort of spearheaded, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if the country actually took its border seriously and it reformed its immigration process and whatnot, you know, granting an amnesty like that for a one time and then fixing the rest of it for all time wouldn't have been that offensive to anyone. The problem was that everybody that came after him decided to just pretend like we didn't have a border and pretend like we actually didn't need to manage that situation whatsoever. And the same is true here. He assumed that some very minor, some very marginal environmental protections was, you know, something that was worth doing to try to protect people and whatnot. I probably, you know, if I could go back in time, would have told him not to do it. But the problem was everyone that came after him. And everybody, see, the thing about government is they always build on what exists. You are creating a base upon which everyone is going to build upon. They will never pull them back. They will only add to them. So that's one of the reasons why I always tell people on the political right, never agree ever to expand government, to, you know, have a new department, to grow things, because 20 years, 30 years from now, that little baby thing that you just created, that seed will germinate and create a plant. And, you know, Department of Education's like that, right? Started as a little thing, and now it's taken over our entire lives federally. It happens all the time.
You know, Matt, even though I'm in my deep 70s now, my short-term memory is not as good as it was when I was in my 40s. My long-term memory's pretty good. I can remember when I was a young teenager, like 13, 14 years old, hearing news in California about fires, floods, mudslides, the need for water. And at that time, the population of California was 14 million people. Now it's over 40 million people. They've done nothing to solve these problems over 50 years. They've done nothing to solve these problems over 15 years. You talked about New York City. New York City got so bad, they finally elected somebody like Rudy Giuliani to clean it up. But again, does California have to get to the bottom of the drain before they start to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps? Does it have to get that bad? Cannot people learn from lessons that they've experienced already?
You would hope so. You would hope so. I think there is one key element that we need to make sure that we also acknowledge too. It's not just that the opportunity is provided to you because the state or the city or, you know, the country or whatever has fallen to such a state. You also have to have the ability to take advantage of that failure. And the thing about Giuliani was that he made sense to a lot of people in New York, right? He was a law and order, justice kind of guy, and he was, you know, all about cleaning things up, and he's well-spoken, and he was able to really take how people felt and turn it into something that was politically potent that would allow him to win. I think you definitely saw that with Trump in both of his election wins, certainly this last one, which was far more successful with him having the popular vote and whatnot. I think in California, it's going to require not only everyone being fed up, but somebody or a movement has to be there to be able to actually say to people, look, you are unhappy. Here is why you are unhappy, and here is a better way forward that'll fix these things. And until and unless someone like that comes around to be able to actually articulate to people, I think they're going to be waiting for change.
All right. Matt Gagnon, we want to thank you so much to join. Matt is the Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Policy Institute. Hey, Matt, please leave our audience with a way to connect with you, to read the things that you write, find out more about the Maine Policy Institute.
Maine Policy Institute can be found online at mainepolicy.org. We also have a Substack at mainepolicy.substack.com. You can find me pretty much anywhere. I'm all over the place, but I'm certainly on X, Twitter, whatever it's called these days. You can find me there. And I have my own Substack, pretenseofknowledge.substack.com. So you can find me there as well. And I'm always doing interviews like this. So anytime you see my face.
Hey, Matt, do you miss the swamp?
Do I miss it? Absolutely not. I loved the city, but I did not miss the swamp at all when I left.
All right.
Not in the least bit.
Matthew Gagnon, again, thank you so much for joining us. Take care and God bless.
Thanks so much, guys.
And you are listening to and watching the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Angle. I'm Rick Trader. Go nowhere. Sharon and I will be back with more news and commentary right after this break.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest 3-in-1 sale ever with a limited edition product, a back-in-stock special, and a closeout deal you won't find anywhere else. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get our MyPillow bed sheets, only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings, regular $119.98, only $29.88. Once they're gone for good. How about our My Towels? They're finally back in stock, but not for long. Get a six-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And for the first time and the only time ever, get our limited edition premium My Pillows. They're made with Giza cotton and designer gusset. Queen $17.98, King's only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get the best offers ever. Quantities are extremely limited, so order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos radio show with Sharon Angle and yours truly, Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow studios, the MyStore studios of the AUN TV network. And I want to remind you about a few things. One is our voice text hotline, 415-854-2677. 415-854-2677. You can leave a voice message or a text message. I listen to and read everyone, respond to most, or you can email us at auntv@yahoo.com. That's auntv@yahoo.com. And check out our 24-hour-day, 7-day-week stream on Rumble. Easy to do, easy to find. Go to our website, aun-tv.com, aun-tv.com. Right below the banner, just off to the right a little bit, you'll see a little red strip. Says watch AUN TV live. Just click on that. takes you right to our Rumble stream. Also, you can find us on Roku. You can find us on Amazon Fire Stick. All kinds of ways you can keep track of what the Conservative Commandos are up to and doing.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabay Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabay sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquids simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.